Welcome to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone, the podcast where we highlight nonprofit leaders in the trenches who share the strategies and tactics they use to grow their organizations and make a difference each day. As we like to say, if you want to be discouraged by a general sense of decay, read the news. But if you want to be inspired by concrete stories of growth, talk to a nonprofit. Here's to the modern day superheroes, the nonprofit leaders. Let's dive in.
Hey, everyone. We're here with Alexandra Gardner. She is a fundraising and development consultant that has worked with a variety of different nonprofit organizations. Alexandra, thanks so much for being here with us.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And as has become our tradition here, I would love to jump right into the heart of a story that you could tell about a dramatic or climactic or tense moment that you've experienced in the nonprofit development world.
Sure. I would say that probably all of the experiences in the nonprofit world are dramatic in terms of fundraising. It's a lot of pressure to have to rely on others for support monetarily to be able to advance the mission of your organization. And what that means is having the ability to fundraise in order to pay your own salary and the salaries of your coworkers, as well as to make sure that you're serving them out. In my case, children that really need your services. And so there's never really a dull moment in the arena of fundraising. I would say probably my most dramatic instance for me is I worked pretty heavily on a project at one of my organizations that I was working at, and we had to redevelop the historic Tiger Stadium. And so that stadium had been just a big field after it got demolished and sat blanket for about 10 to 15 years. And the old Tiger Stadium Conservancy hadn't really decided what they wanted to do with it. And so people had passed proposals over and over, and they never gave anyone the earmark. The organization I worked for finally got an earmark to build a kids' stadium. And so a state-of-the-art stadium for kids' youth programming. And we were able to start that project. I think we initially thought the project would be $12.5 million. We had to raise that in 3 years because in order to receive the earmark from the Conservancy, you had to have your money done and fundraised and building your building in 3 years. So what we didn't know is that once we were going to start building, that the old Tiger Stadium was actually buried under the ground still. And so that took our goal from 12.5 million to about 22 million with the same exact project plan, the same people we were reaching out to, and the same number of prospects. So if you can imagine what that meant to a development team of four and having the same time limit commitment to bring in an additional $10 million in revenue.
Unbelievable. That is so nerve-wracking.
Yeah, for sure.
How did it working out?
I have no idea how we did it, but we did it. It took a lot of relying on support of other community leaders, so really empowering others to bring their connections to the table, because we knew that we couldn't do it by just relying on people that we knew intimately. And so who do our board members know? What are their companies, you know, willing to pledge? Who do their companies know? How can we also, sorry, I have a small code season, but how can we diversify our portfolio? And so we're not just looking at foundation support or corporation support, but let's think about the companies that might have had a presence when Tiger Stadium was up. People had a real connection to the old Tiger Stadium. People had so many memories there. You know, Nelson Mandela spoke there. The Detroit Lions won its only football championship there. Joe Louis fought there. So it had a big historical precedence. And so really capitalizing on someone might not be, you know, that excited to give because of the children that are going to be playing there. And that's just honestly, that's how it is. But somebody really may be excited to give because their great grandfather took them there for their first football baseball game. And so how can we find those people too and really make this a community oriented project and get buy-in from all those different crowds? And so we were able to do that very well, and we were able to hit that goal.
Absolutely incredible. That is terrifying, but has got to feel great now that it's behind you and that it all
100%.
Absolutely. I'd love to hear some of your backgrounds and how you originally got interested in nonprofit work and then how you got to where you are today.
For sure. So I attended the University of Michigan for undergrad. I knew I was a psychology major and I knew that I wanted to help people. I kind of pivoted out of the psychology career track after doing some intense volunteering at a daycare and at a Boys and Girls Club through my junior and senior year. And I knew that I had to somehow work in this arena full time. And I didn't really know what that meant. We didn't really learn much about the nonprofit sector in college and not much about how to be a part of it. And so I left undergrad and I went to initially Case Western University, Reserve University for grad school. And what I thought that program was intended to be a master's in human service administration. And so I thought it would be kind of a high level way of looking at how I can work in the human service sector. My program kind of turned into a more social work track. And I have so much respect for all the social workers out there because I did not have the heart to do what they do every day. I was totally depressed, totally sad because I was working one-to-one with the most vulnerable population. And I was so sad about it. And I couldn't separate work from home. And so I knew I still wanted to help, but I needed to help from a kind of higher level way of looking at it. And so that one-to-one interaction every day was just weighing too hard on me. I wanted to take every kid home. I wanted to buy every family things and, you know, I couldn't. And so how can I still help, but do it from a different approach? And so I left Case Western and went back to U of M for graduate school. And I got a master's in public administration. And I had a focus on nonprofit entities. And so it was kind of a way of looking on how to run a nonprofit as opposed to how to work in the program from the day to day. And so I graduated there in December of 2015. And in February of 2015, the Tiger Stadium Project had launched that I referenced previously. What was really cool about it, it was for an organization called Detroit PAL, and that's Detroit Police Athletic League. They've been around since 1969, and I was actually a PAL kid my whole life. And so I participated and benefited from the programs that I would in turn be fundraising for. And so it was kind of the coolest thing I've ever done, really working in the trenches to make reality happen from a program that I've benefited from my entire life. And so fast forward, I worked on the project as a coordinator. And so I was literally just coordinating the fundraising efforts, helping to do the day-to-day logistics. And my boss at the time, you know, he said, I think you'll be pretty good at actually asking for money because you're pretty confident in this. People tend to really shut up when you talk. Why don't you try? And so I went in a meeting. I think my first gift that I asked for was $500,000, which was crazy. Wow. Because I'm like, I'm not going to get that. But I just asked and I actually got it. And at that moment, I knew asking for money was both fun, exhilarating, and it gave me a sense of pride that kind of nothing else had given me, because I know that these direct dollars are directly responsible for helping the kids that we help. And so it's kind of like my work, I can see having a direct connection to the well-being of the population that we serve. And so worked on that project, finished it, opened up this beautiful state-of-the-art stadium. Leadership challenges were happening during that time, but wanted to finish the project out and then went to Playworks Michigan, where I became a development director and kind of had the responsibility of doing all things development. I was a team of one, as opposed to my previous position being a team of four. So led me to do some consulting, people asking me, hey, can you come teach our development team some best trades? Can you come be, you know, our presence in the community when we have to be in-house writing grants? And so that led me to really think about consulting realistically. And that's what I'm going to be doing now.
Absolutely incredible. That is so cool. Is there a tactic or an approach or a mindset that you could share that might be helpful for other people to experiment with that's been particularly helpful for you in your fundraising work?
Yeah. I think my favorite mantra that I kind of developed myself or learned myself is that, no is personal. And so if you ask for something and it's a no, it is not personal. It is not people asking for money is very scary. And, you know, even personally, I ask for money professionally, but asking for money personally, I can't even do. You know, I can't ask family for money. I can't ask my significant other for money. It just feels too weird. So I can totally understand how asking for money professionally every day will feel even crazier. But the difference is when you ask professionally, there's no, that is personal. My previous boss, Eddie Trey Powell, told me a really great thing when I started fundraising is that you're not asking for anything on behalf of you. You're asking on behalf of the kids that you serve that don't have a voice. And when you think about it like that, you ask away because I'm doing all the things that they would do if they could in terms of saying what we need, but they can't. And so it's up to me to do it.
Absolutely. Okay, brilliant. We can now jump into our pro-con segment, which is always very fun. And the topic that we've selected for today is our fundraising quotas or, you know, fundraising targets on a personal level for development staff. Is that a good idea? So, Alexandra, would you like to take the side that yes, that is usually a good idea, or no, it's typically not a good idea?
I'm going to say no.
I love it. Okay. So why don't you make an opening statement on why fundraising quotas are not a great idea, and then I will try and argue against that, and then you can respond, and we'll see where we end up.
Okay, sure. So I guess I would say unrealistic quotas are a horrible idea, and getting to a realistic quota is hard. So it is very hard to put a cap. Well, I guess two things. One, it could put a cap on what someone really has the potential to do. And so someone could easily out-fundraise this particular number, but they may feel like there's no benefit to doing so if they just hit their goal. You know, in the nonprofit world, we don't get bonuses. There's very seldom that we're getting raises. And so it's not like in a sales world where you might overachieve your goal because you're going to get something back. So it's very hard. It's already hard to meet a goal. So it's very hard to think that someone will try to exceed that. Secondly, a development professional can work their butt off, and I mean tirelessly, on one particular gift and do everything that they need to do. And then at the end, the person just decides, thank you, you are great. It's just not a good fit right now. And that is not indicative of all the hard work and time and commitment they put towards that goal. And so to just say that they were unsuccessful because the number wasn't hit, I think is both demoralizing and an inaccurate picture of the work that they actually did. And so it's very hard to put a number on the work of a development professional. Yes, we have to have goals in mind because budgets do need to be met. But to say that this person has to hit a certain number, I think is unrealistic because it's not all encompassing of what a development person does.
Sure, that's very fair. I'll now try and argue against. So wouldn't you agree that there has to be some kind of minimum threshold level where maybe it's not a quota as in this is the target or this is the maximum, but this is the, like, this is kind of the baseline amount, just so you know that, like, because you have to cover your own salary, you have to raise money above that. Doesn't that serve as a helpful communications tool so that people know, like, this probably isn't going to be a good fit long-term for me or the organization if I can't raise at least X, but the hope would be, you know, many, many times more than X. Is a quota as a minimum a good idea?
Yeah, I totally think it's a minimum. And I think that using historical precedents to set those minimums are very accurate and feasible. You'll enter some nonprofit leaderships where, you know, you'll be brought on a team and it's like, oh, great, we have our saving grace now. And so we used to raise $50,000 at this event, but let's raise $200,000 now because she's here.
Right.
And that's when it becomes both difficult, unrealistic, and demoralizing when you can't hit that, but it was unrealistic to begin with. So yes, there should be a threshold, but it has to one err on the side of we probably won't hit it because you never know, you know, when the foundation is going to change their priorities that year or when a corporate sponsor is going to say, hey, my sister now works in another nonprofit, I'm going to give money to her. But, you know, let's use history to see, okay, at the very least, we've raised at least this much. Maybe we'll increase that by 5%, but we're definitely not going to say that this person needs to raise 5 times more at the same exact event, knowing that we've never gotten there before. Because, and I've seen that happen, and it really makes your job not fun, and it makes your job more stress and more pressure than it is to be happy that you're actually doing the work. And in the nonprofit sector, I think people have to be happy when they're doing the work, because we're not making the big bucks. We're doing a lot of time. And so we need that our heart to be happy in order to get up every day. And when you take that away from it, it turns into, I don't make money. I don't have a time for personal life, and I'm not happy. This sucks.
Absolutely. And I feel like a failure, even though maybe the goal is unrealistic. And
exactly. And it's not even that you feel like a failure. It's like, I feel like I failed my an entire organization, which is a lot of stress to have on one person's shoulder. And so it's definitely not, you know, it doesn't work out for anyone, not the person, not the development professional, not the organization, not the community served, to set unrealistic expectations.
Absolutely. Okay, that was great. Yeah, I definitely agree with all the points you made there. We can jump into some rapid fire questions. If you could describe yourself in one word, what would you say and why?
So I'm going to use a word that someone else described me as, because it's hard to describe yourself, I think. So I would say authentic. And I say that because the first boss I've ever learned, that I actually think I've learned everything from, and I credit everything to him, he was a fundraising guru. And he let me know that he believed that I'm so successful amongst other things in fundraising because I'm authentic, and people can see authenticity and people can see fake. And so when I'm sitting there and I'm conveying a message and I'm making a real ask, people know it's authentic and people know it's meaningful and necessary because I'm being authentic, and it makes people almost have no choice but to give because they know it's for a real purpose. And so I think that would be the one word that describes me and also has made me the most successful in my fundraising career.
Beautiful. Is there an exciting shift that you're seeing taking place in the nonprofit world that you think is really positive?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things that I'm seeing. I think that nonprofits are finally realizing that it takes money to make money a little bit. And what I mean by that is that, one, they're starting to pay development professionals a little bit more appropriately. Which helps to get the talent in the door that you need. You know, you already make a risk when you enter the nonprofit sector, but your people should still be able to pay their bills and still be able to not have crazy stress day to day, because they will have it, you know, raising the critical vital funds needed to advance a mission. And so paying them appropriately, I think, not only helps them, but helps the organization. So I think that I've been seeing that get a little better. In terms of it takes money to make money, I've seen them understand the importance of paying for other resources. Let's contract out grant writing. Grant writing takes a lot of time. But it's okay to have a contractual grant writer that can work part-time. And then that doesn't have to be in the office. So you're saving on benefits, you're saving on these things, because there's not going to be a grant report due every day. There's not going to be a grant written every day. But when you have your development professional take time away from being in the community and going to events where he or she is meeting people and making these real important connections by writing a grant, you're taking away from critical time that could be spent raising the social capital to get $1 million gift. And so let's outsource things like that. Let's outsource the PR company so a development professional isn't writing a press release for 5 hours. You know, let's pay for some earned media. Let's actually pay for some things like for-profits have done for a long time, to be in the know and for people to get brand awareness from them. Let's actually do that and treat a nonprofit like a company as well. So I've seen those shifts kind of happen where people are not as scared to use resources, and, you know, not just say we're a nonprofit, so we can have nothing. We can only have water and a laptop. Right. But how about we're a nonprofit and we want to be just as successful as those for-profits. And so let's run our business similarly.
That's such a great perspective. Is there something that you appreciate now as a development professional that you didn't appreciate as much 5 or 10 years ago?
Yes. So I appreciate going to an event where I don't have to work the room. So, you know, I feel like as a development professional now, it's kind of no looking back for me. You're always on, is what I like to say. So you can never go anywhere and not be on, because you never know who's in the room. You never know who's looking at you. It's almost like you're in a political office, to say, like, you're always, and it sucks because it shouldn't matter, but people, when they feel like they invest their money, they feel like they almost own something. And so, you know, seeing a donor out, you have to be in your best behavior. Going into an event, you have to introduce yourself to everyone, because I think I've seen the most success in my career by just a personal network. And so I didn't really understand or appreciate 5 or 10 years ago being able to go to an event and sitting in the back of the room and not saying anything, because there's beauty in silence sometimes. And now you go somewhere, you're always on, you're always introducing yourself. You're always giving that 10-second pitch to every single person you meet, and it never stops. And it won't ever stop as long as you're in a career like this.
Absolutely. That is such a good perspective, especially for people that are newer or maybe thinking about development, that that is what it takes. You are always on.
Absolutely. Always.
Thank you so much, Alexandra, for being here with us. This is so fascinating. I feel like I've learned a lot. Where can people find you online if they want to learn more about you or if in consulting work?
Sure. So I think right now LinkedIn is probably the best way to reach me. Alexandra Gardner. So my last name is spelled G-A-R-D-N-E-R. You know, send me a message on there. We can connect. I'm always open for coffee, lunch. But yeah, I would love to also connect with other development professionals, because what I also learned is that there's a real shortage of development people. And so when people can meet and share best practices, like, this platform is great in doing that, because it is really hard. And a lot of places, when you're at an organization, your development team will want to too. And so even there, there's really no one that does your work. And so getting to meet other people that do our work is very, you know, it's a game changer. It can really help aid to your success in this field.
100% agree. Thanks so much for being here with us, Alexandra. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or giving us a rating or review on your favorite podcast network. We appreciate your support. Until next time.